This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Scott Greenberg. Beneath the cracked exposed playa of the Great Salt Lake, scientists have uncovered something no one expected, a hidden pressurized freshwater aquifer trapped beneath the layers of salt. Today, we're joined by William Johnson, PhD, professor of geology and geophysics at the University of Utah, whose team discovered that ancient freshwater, possibly dating back all the way to the Ice Age, lies beneath the lake's eastern margins and may extend even farther under the lake itself.
Mysterious circular reed-filled, quote-unquote, islands in Farmington Bay now appear to mark places where that freshwater is pushing upward through a previously unknown saltwater boundary, reshaping how scientists understand groundwater movement in one of the West's most threatened ecosystems. Dr. Bill Johnson, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Hello.
It's great to have you. Most people are really tuning in to the crisis of the Great Salt Lake when we talk about the dry lake bed and the toxic dust that will blow and circulate everywhere, including up here in Summit and Wasatch counties. And that's good that people are finally tuning in. But this is a bit of news that is feels a little optimistic. So I'd love to uncover, you know, what it is and what it isn't. It's not a panacea, but it might, you know, there's some positivity behind it. How was this aquifer found?
Yeah, so one thing I would rearrange is the unexpected part of this wasn't the salt lens that we see, the brine lens that we see near the surface across the playa. It's that the freshwater underneath it extends so far in towards the interior of the lake and possibly under the entire lake. We don't know. But the fact that it goes that far in, what we would normally expect as a scientist, hydrologist, knowing generally about hydrology, what we would expect is that brine, as you get towards a lake, would kind of occupy the entire volume underneath that lake. It's denser than the freshwater. You'd expect the freshwater from the mountains to come in somewhere at the periphery. But we find it's coming in way towards the interior. And there's this very, what appears to be deep volume of this freshwater coming in underneath that saline or brine lens. That's the unexpected part. Okay. I thought it would be salt all the way down underneath, say, the Antelope Island Causeway. And lo and behold, it was freshwater only 30 feet below the surface.
Well, as we know, Great Salt Lake in general is not very deep. But what does this suggest about the aquifer? How deep is this aquifer? And when you say ancient aquifer, it makes me think that it's really deep, but I could be wrong. I don't know much about geology.
Well, it's fair enough. I do think that it's fair for us to, from our experience, to think of ancient as deep. But in fact, you can separate the two in the sense that the age of the water, even, you know, only 100 feet below the surface, is ancient. And the sediments above the bedrock extend down to several thousand meters. So something approaching 10,000 feet of sediment in places in Farmington Bay, under Farmington Bay, down to bedrock. Now, we don't have wells deep and that deep. So we don't know if the freshwater extends that deep or whether it gets salty at depth. At those depths, because it tends to be the case that when you look at groundwater, it does tend to get older and saltier the deeper you go. Okay. And so it may be that it turns more saline down below thousands of feet. We do have wells going to about 1,000 feet though in the southern part of Farmington Bay. And that water is fresh and that water is ancient in that the carbon 14 dates are thousands of years. It's hard to date them precisely when they're that old. Because of the water-rock interaction that has happened, it makes it hard to pin down the date exactly. But we can confidently say they're millennia in age and quite possibly extending 14,000 years, which is the, you know, going back into the Ice Age.
Well, let's talk about something you mentioned earlier when the snowpack melts and comes down off the mountains and into the valley, and we would expect it just to come right on top through the, you know, through rivers and or streams, right into the Great Salt Lake. So how does freshwater get trapped beneath something that big? How does it get trapped beneath the salt lake?
Yeah, that's a great question. So indeed, when we have snowmelt coming from the mountains, a good portion of that comes directly down the streams into the lake. That's the dominant way that we fill the lake, right? But another portion of that water infiltrates into the subsurface in the mountain range itself and also on its way down. And my colleagues, Kip Solomon and Paul Brooks, published a paper recently showing that, in fact, on average, water spends a few years underground before coming into the stream. And so all the water entering Great Salt Lake has had some time in the subsurface. Now, a portion of that water that infiltrates into the subsurface, you can think of these as arcs. They go down into the subsurface, and then it's kind of a parabolic, it's not the right perfect shape, but it's an idea of the shape of an arc that then comes through the subsurface and emits into a stream and continues on down the mountain. The arcs can be very large. And so there are arcs that go from towards the center of the mountains, towards the mountain crest, down a very long arc coming underneath the playa and coming into the system through that very long transport arc. And that water will have very old ages associated with it. So we call these residence time distributions, but the point is water just doesn't only come into streams in the same year that the snowpack melts. We have a whole history of residence times entering the system, representing these different path arcs.
If it's coming down underneath, I'm kind of curious, what kind of tools did you use, your team use, what technologies did you use to detect and map the hidden reservoir in the first place?
Yeah, so, you know, in previous studies of the amount of groundwater coming into Great Salt Lake, the estimates have varied, anywhere between about 5% of the water budget up to about 12% of the water budget. And that was all done by difference, by understanding how much water is coming into the lake, how much is leaving by evaporation, and then by difference, how much must be groundwater. We wanted to do something more direct. We wanted to actually start putting wells into the periphery of the lake to understand what that interface between the freshwater and saline systems looked like. So we installed what are called piezometers, or we'll just call them wells. They're observation wells. They're not production wells. And so we installed piezometers for what we could afford. These are modest budgets coming from the state. And so they were at most 120 feet deep. And there's a nice technology that ET Tech is the drilling company we use. And they're great. They're willing to go anywhere. I can talk a little bit more about that when we talk about the round spots. Use them, and they have a geoprobe technology that literally pushes these wells into the subsurface to allow us to sample at depth. So that was our primary way, a very direct, simple way of trying to understand the freshwater-saltwater interface. And that had not really been done before to a large extent. Then we can get samples out of these wells. First, we can get a core sample, a sediment core. And from that, we can understand the sediment lithology, which is mostly sandy clay and silt. So it's pretty tight sediments. When we talk about tightness, we're talking about permeability is low. They don't transmit water very readily. And we can extract the pore water to measure the salinity to understand that salt freshwater interface. And then we put a well in after extracting the core to extract groundwater at the bottom of these things. So we're extracting groundwater and then measuring in the groundwater chemistry, salinity, but also more valuable. Kip Solomon runs a facility that can determine the age of the groundwater based on environmental tracers. That's a different way of doing it than using carbon-14. And it can also, those environmental tracers can help us to infer, where did that water come from? Did it come from the mountain or did it come from the playa? Where was it? Where did it enter the subsurface? That's probably the way I should put it. The gas content of the water tells us the elevation at which it entered the subsurface. And so we could see that this ancient pressurized groundwater came from the mountains. So that was a primary tool. So those were the main things that we did with those samples, those direct samples. We also measured things like the permeability using flow tests in the sediments to understand how well they transmit water. And again, the upshot of that is that they're pretty tight, but that's consistent with the age of the water. It's tight sediment, it won't readily flow. And so, you know, the water that's under the playa is pretty darn old. It's been there for a while.
That is to say that there's a lot of pressure. You know, in reading this research, it seems to me it paints this picture of, you know, water trying to percolate up. And in some places it has, which is what reed-filled little islands are. But it's also the fact that the sediment is pretty impermeable. It's what has kept that water from surfacing. So now, as you know, our geology is changing, or you know, the water coming down from the mountains or whatever it is that's supplying the aquifer, you know, what does that mean for today's geology and for really the possibility of getting to that water, accessing that water?
Yeah, I mean, if I can break that up a bit, you know, you're alluding to the circular features, the what we call round spots. We couldn't come up with anything more scientific or romantic than that. But they've been called other things. Brian Nafley dubbed them the mystery islands. And Kevin Perry shared the term Phragmites oases. But we just went with round spots to be as generic as possible. But the point is, we first saw those when we started this project, before we knew anything about the saltwater-freshwater interface. We saw them out there on the playa because the lake had receded so much, right? We initiated this project about the time that the lake was on this its low level, lowest level recorded.
And so 2022 or what?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so we could see things we couldn't see before from Google Earth. We looked at those and thought, that's curious. What are those little things? And so we talked, you know, in the back of our minds, this idea of getting out to those to see if we could figure out what they were. So in the midst of understanding that, oh, there's this freshwater resource underneath the brine lens, we then, as we wheedled through that, we realized, well, let's spend some time looking at these circular features. And the only way to get out to them without making a mess is to take snow bikes and ride them a few miles on the playa to these features. And it's tricky because it's either really hot or really cold or really wet and muddy. And so the conditions that make it easy to get out there are few and far between. And then when you get there, they're somewhere around 50 to 100 meters in diameter. And so there are these islands, and the Phragmites grow up to about 15 feet tall. And they're kind of impenetrable. Okay. So my student and I, Ebenezer Adamakwa-Mensa, who's a graduate student who's here from Ghana, who has since graduated, now he's working with a consulting company in the valley. He and I went there with none of the tools needed to actually get inside these things. We actually started to just try to smash down the Phragmites, which turned out to be impossible and a really difficult task. So we came back with a hedge trimmer. And so it was us and garden tools and a hand auger, you know, cutting away into the center of these things and then using a hand auger to muscle in shallow wells to about 15 feet, actually 11 feet deep. And it was exhausting, and the bugs were everywhere, and the birds were angry with us. And at the end of that day, I just basically had it and said, this is just a vegetation structure. We have wasted our time, you know, came out of it with a bad attitude because it was such hard work. And he had collected the water sample from the wells we put in, and he calls me that night and he says, the middle is fresh. I'm like, oh my God, we didn't waste our time. These look like they might be little pipes of fresh water. And so then I cajoled the state, the commissioner's office for Great Salt Lake, for some funds to bring a drill rig out there, to bring the GeoProbe technology out there. And I can tell you that of any drilling company, ET Tech was the only one willing to touch this, because I put it at a 30% chance of losing their GeoProbe, which is, you know, a couple $100,000 instrument, into the playa. And so I let the governor's office know, kind of half jokingly, that they needed to have a couple of Hueys on call to rescue us. But it got out there without an incident, and we were able to put in 60-foot deep wells into these features, this feature. And we could see this freshwater pipe extending down to the 60 feet. And we measured the sediment permeability in the cores and saw that it's coarser. So for whatever reason, we had these little coarser pipes of sediment bringing this freshwater up as kind of a window through that saline lens. And so so they're interesting. They're little windows into that freshwater system that's ancient and pressurized. But why they exist, it's not clear. It's an interesting curiosity. It may have to do with the geologic structure of the basin. They are out towards the middle of the basin, and it may have to do with the underlying fault that governs the fact that that basin exists. We don't know. We don't know yet. More work could be done there. And why they're circular, I don't know. But they're curiously circle-shaped. So there are things to learn about those that are interesting. But, you know, what they really come down to as windows into this pressurized freshwater. So to get to your question about, well, what do we do with this? We need to understand how much water can be utilized from this system without having detrimental effects. You know, there are beneficial effects of this groundwater that we need to understand before we go extracting more of it. And my sense is that a first order objective is to understand whether we could use this fresh water to wet dust hotspots and douse them in a meaningful way without perturbing the freshwater system too much.
Right.
So that's one thing that Kevin Perry and I have proposed to do, and we'll see whether that gets the green light or not. But to me, that's a primary objective, because it's very practical. And it's unlikely we'll be able to fill Farmington Bay and other parts of the playa high enough to avoid some dust spots appearing at the higher elevations, right? And this would be a great way to get at that. So that's our objective.
Yeah, that's wild. Okay, has there been any way of ascertaining the volume of this water or size of the aquifer?
Yeah, it's the way they flow. They're artesian, right? They're under pressure. So the water coming from the mountains is backing up underneath the playa, creating pressure so that we have artesian wells in the playa. And when you put these wells in, they flow modestly. They're artesian. So they flow up and out of the well top, but at a rate on the order of a couple liters per minute. That's not a gusher. It's just a little slow fountain. So this modest flow is enough that you could treat an area, you could submerge an area with this flow on the order of 30 feet in diameter. And the question is, will that be meaningful for mitigating dust? And we don't know the answer to that yet, right? Because a lot of other things come into play. How fast the water evaporates, how fast it soaks into the unsaturated subsurface overlying the groundwater, how much you need it to be saturated in order to form a crust that's going to be useful for mitigating the dust problem. That all isn't easily calculated. It's a matter of actually just trying it. And so that's what we propose to do.
You mentioned the wetlands. I'm wondering, without the level of the lake, the water level going down, how would you find out if there are other places that might be fed also from the aquifer? I mean, you're suspecting these wetlands are that, but is there any indication that there are other places?
You know, the round spots are an indication, right? That there are places where this can come up into the system. We haven't gone further into the interior of the lake, but it's been speculated that the microbialites that grow around the periphery of the lake and that are kind of a basis for the whole ecosystem may be groundwater fed. And one thing that, you know, I should do or somebody should do is pound some piezometers into the microbialites to understand, is the water fresher underneath them? So there's lots of speculation, and it's, I mean, that's the funny thing is, it took us getting on our mountain bikes and beating ourselves up to go find out what the red brown spots were. And that's so much the case with figuring things out about the lake, because it's hard to get to.
Yeah.
And so it's a matter of mustering up the energy to go do that stuff.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a fascinating conversation with Dr. William Johnson, professor of geology and geophysics at the University of Utah, whose team discovered that there's an ancient freshwater reservoir that lies beneath the Great Salt Lake. And I'm wondering, Dr. Johnson, is it possible that there are similar ice age freshwater systems hiding beneath other lakes around the world? Or is this unique to our Great Salt Lake?
No, it's interesting. At the same time that we found this, they found that there's a vast ice age freshwater resource off of Cape Cod in the sediments offshore there. So, you know, given that, I would have to say that there are remnant Pleistocene ice age aquifers in these marginal areas, whether it's coastal, true coastal, or whether it's kind of inland, we'll call it coastal, right, on the Great Salt Lake. And of course, Great Salt Lake is one of many remnant Ice Age lakes, right? Lake Pyramid Lake in California, in Nevada, excuse me. And of course, I'm blanking on the names of all these lakes right now as I'm trying to call them. But the point is, there are much of the Intermountain West had these lakes. And it'd be interesting to understand whether this is characteristic of them or not. Because for all we know, there is ice age, potentially ice age water underneath the entirety of Great Salt Lake. Because as you said, Lynn, it's only, you know, 30 feet thick. That's not very thick. So it's quite possible there's old water underneath this thing. Whether that is a resource or not, we wouldn't know yet. But it certainly is interesting scientifically that would be down there.
Well, this is absolutely interesting and even fascinating. And we could probably go on for a little bit longer, but we have to wrap this up. And I'm going to ask you, I guess the last question would be, what surprised you most during your research? And what do you think are the next big questions you're hoping to answer with this discovery?
So what surprised me most is just how far into the interior this freshwater system exists. And what we'd like to understand is, you know, what's the storage and the fluxes through this system, right? How much of it could be utilized without having impacts to other parts of the system? For example, it's possible that all those wetlands alongside the Legacy Highway, which is in this transition from the playa to the upland mountain front system, those could be there precisely because the water coming from the mountains is hitting this relatively stagnant old freshwater underneath on the playa and coming up to the surface because of that, and it's feeding all of these wetlands. So would we lose flow to the wetlands if we start extracting water from the playa? We don't know, and that needs to be understood. That would be part of the studies. So we need to understand how much we can start utilizing that system before we start having detrimental effects.
The last question I guess I have is it possible that water from the Great Salt Lake is actually trickling down through sediment and getting, I guess, desalinized as it's falling into the reservoir underneath?
It's unlikely. Everywhere that people look, as you go down deeper, you've got more water-rock interaction, the water gets older, it tends to get saltier. And so we've never seen a process by which you actually desalinate water as it moves downward and has more water-rock interaction, okay? So very, very unlikely. So if there's fresh water underneath Great Salt Lake, it's because it's left over from the establishment of Lake Great Salt Lake in its current configuration.
That's absolutely fascinating. Dr. William Johnson, Professor of Geology and Geophysics at the University of Utah, thank you so much for joining us today on Cool Science Radio. This is fascinating. We'd love to have you back if you find out any more information about this, if you have another breakthrough that can really tell us what's going on with what's going on under the Great Salt Lake.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.